Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
The second person I know that's moving this week is Alex Hollins. So he's had a lot of stuff going on in his life, so we want to talk about him, not even about what he's writing about, just about his own life. And so he joins us right now through the wonders of cell phones, and not Skype because his internet's not hooked up. How do you live without internet?
I feel like I'm in the dark ages, man. I don't know. How did you live without the internet?
How did people do this? So 2 weeks ago, you had like the tectonic plates of your life moving around as your mother came down and is looking to homestead and be near her baby. So you dealt with that, and now this week you're moving to a legitimate neighborhood from the arson-infested woods of Georgia. How is the move going?
Well, first off, this neighborhood thing's messing with me. I'm not going to lie to you. If any of you guys who are used to living in rural areas, moving into an HOA, it's kind of a culture shock akin to moving to a whole different country. Like, everybody leaves their outside lights on just all the time, and everyone's got like 600 outside lights. So I can't walk by a window without it looking like I live in an airport. How do people live like this? I don't understand. And I don't, how far into my yard am I supposed to let people just casually stroll before I start? You know, I don't understand how people live this close together.
Well, they don't.
It's driving me crazy.
If they're not a threat, you know, they should. I mean, did you respect other people's property lines when you were a kid?
Oh, no, kids are cool. I understand kids are going to play, kids are going to run around. In fact, kids are one of the reasons why we moved here. You know, so okay. We ought to be close to some kids. It's like the neighborhood, like, you know, congregating because there's like a new weird, big, hairy guy here in the house. So people want to gather up and be like, size me up, you know, and I want to introduce myself, you know, as you do, you know, and everybody wants to have a conversation and just hang out.
They're sizing you up. They're sizing you up, bro. They're having the secret neighborhood meeting. Right? And they're all going to have opinion on the new family. Like, all right, so, you know, what actions are we going to have to take relative to this guy?
The best case scenario for me is that they have this side that they think, and they're just going to ostracize them and leave them alone. That would be a best case scenario.
No, but you know,
I don't want to go to meetings.
You can't do that, though, because you're there for your wife.
I know, she's already moved the neighbors, man. She's already walking around. And she goes back at the house and she's like, yeah, the guy carrying boxes. That's my husband. He's in town. She's going to ask him for whatever you need. Nope. You can't ask him for whatever you need. Maybe it'll be nice. I don't know. I'm just not used to going around this many people.
Okay, hold on. You're a little bit garbled. All right. So now, do you have any kind of head device on? Or any kind.
I don't. Unfortunately, this is the best I've got.
Okay.
Here.
No.
Maybe I
all
can
right.
Find a different place in the house.
No. Maybe that might be more appropriate. But you can wander around, and I'll tell you better or worse. Okay. So.
How is this? Does it sound all right?
That's better.
All right. I'll stay right here.
Stay right there. Okay. So overall, how is both your mother, has she relocated now? And so is she there helping you? And how is this whole thing going?
It all gets even weirder from there. So my brother's also moving. He's buying a house and moving as well. And the house that he's buying is an in-law apartment. So it looks like my mom's going to be moving with him, which works out great for everybody. I've got a babysitter nearby. She's got a safe place to stay. I know it might be crazy that that's my number one thing with every time someone moves, I'm like, well, how safe is it? But I feel like one of us needs to have that conversation. And nobody else in my family prioritizes those sorts of things, so that's what I bring to the table. Right? It's just like, I don't want my mom living in a bad neighborhood because she's on a budget. You know, she's retired.
Right.
So, like, I don't think the best thing for her would be to live in, like, a really tough neighborhood.
Right.
As a 60-year-old lady.
Right.
You know? But I also didn't particularly want her living here.
Well, and so your brother solves that for you.
Yeah, so, you know, he has enough money to get a much bigger house, you know, which really makes things a lot easier for him. He's a responsible brother. I'm the brother that, like, sits around all day writing about North Korea. It, for some reason, doesn't pay as well as having a great career.
Does your brother have a great career?
He does. He actually, he's always been in the racing industry.
Oh.
For a long time, he helped run Skip Barber Racing, but now he's the general manager of Road Atlanta, which is one of the largest racetracks in the country. He's very successful within the racing world, you know, and he's really the connection I have to the racing world, which is great for me because I've been out of it for a while now. But yeah, I mean, working for NASCAR pays pretty well, you know.
Wow. Things we don't know about the Hollings family. So now you've got your whole family relocating to be close to you. This is wonderful. All right, so the move itself.
Oh, that's the worst.
The move itself, let's talk about that. Now, there's not a whole lot of things that drive people more crazy than actually having to move. And how have you, are you moving yourself? Do you have movers involved in this? How is this working?
Doing it myself. The only person that I wrote to help me move some furniture was my brother. I've moved a lot, man. You know, not just in the Marine Corps, but growing up, we moved around a lot. I didn't go to the same school 2 years in a row, I think, until high school. I'm good at moving. You know, I've got gypsy blood. So I'd argue probably half the boxes we had in my house out in the woods for the last 3 years, we didn't even open. You know, it's got old photo albums and things that you want to make sure you hang on to. You know, you want to maintain your connections to the past, but you don't need dandy. You know, so in all honesty, move is not too bad, except now I have a kid. I have never moved with a kid before, and that adds a whole new element to every step of the way, you know? Where you usually have two people, you know, unpacking and moving stuff around, it's always one of us is unpacking. One of us is trying to keep our daughter alive in this minefield that is like half unpacked boxes that for all I know are full of knives and, you know, strange environment. We don't have door guards up yet. So it slows everything down, but she is having, my daughter is loving having so much more room and stuff to mess with, new ways to try to kill herself. She really, you will not find a better way to make my daughter laugh than to let her almost die. And catch her.
Well, come on.
The funniest thing in the world.
In keeping with marine life, it's not really fun until somebody gets hurt or something gets substantially broken.
That's what my mom keeps telling me. She's you're upset that your daughter keeps trying to hurt herself? Does that sound familiar? You know, I spent most of my life, for anybody who's not familiar with me, I've spent most of my life either finding ways to hurt myself or in recovery from a surgery. So, I guess I can't hold it against my daughter that she's on the same track.
I just kind of wish
she was smarter than me. You know? But she is smarter than me, I'd argue.
Okay, let's talk about
after her mother.
When you move yourself, obviously the key part is the heavy thing. So your brother showed up and he moved the big stuff, and then now it's you going back and getting things you can move by yourself. How much big stuff? How many loads did that take you? Did you rent a truck? Are you using your pickup truck? How are you doing it?
See, you know, this is where having a brother in the racing world really comes in handy, you know, because a racing trailer that he uses for his cars can fit pretty much a whole house in it, you know? So it only took one trip because, you know, he came by in his big turbo diesel with his giant trailer, loaded everything up, and then he dropped it off at my new house. He helped me with the furniture, and then I've just kind of been picking away at the boxes ever since. But I had a few friends offer to help move me and stuff, but the thing is, I've helped so many people move over the years. Nobody wants to do that. I'm not going to do that.
And
are you
going to be that guy who even asks?
Exactly. Listen, they're boxes. A lot of my stuff are in banker boxes because we still have them from the last 10 times we moved in the Marine Corps. Like, I can handle this. and I'd rather you stay my friend. You know, like, I don't want to have to explain why I have like 3 boxes full of old notebooks from high school. I don't want to explain, you know, because I'm a writer. You don't throw away old writing, no matter how terrible it is.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, let alone. So, do you need all the paper copies though? Because you haven't. I mean, a lot of your stuff is committed electronically. Yes.
Yeah, I suppose I probably should scan some of that old stuff. I'm too embarrassed to look at it.
Oh.
You know, I keep it because I'm like, well, it's my old writing, and if I ever make it big one day, I'd love to be able to look back and say, wow, this terrible thing I wrote in high school, you know, that's, who would have thought I went from there to here, you know? So I'm hanging on to it as an insurance policy in case I ever become successful in whatever imaginary standard I've decided to success. By a lot of writing standards, I'm already successful.
Yeah, so absolutely, absolutely. But you
that's
know,
the part about writing, though.
The
this year I'm doing very well as a writer, but next year people may not care what I have to say.
No, I don't.
You
I think you do quality work, and I think you're as you build. It's kind of like a pyramid, unless you're an idiot, right? And you're not an idiot. So I mean, you do quality work, and so I think the more of that, you know, the broader that foundation, the more solid it gets, then I think the more successful you become.
I hope you're right, and
trust me, I'm right. I'm right way more than I'm wrong. Okay, my kids hate that. My kids hate it, but you know, not throwing.
What's important though is that you acknowledge that you are wrong sometimes, because it's my personal belief that anyone who says they're never wrong, like when it comes to foreign policy, this type of analysis work, and those are not my opinion after the statement. Right? All too often we make declarative statements. And then they're like, well, I'm done with this topic. You know, and then 2 weeks later, I'll admit readily, a lot of times, like my foreign policy analysis work, I'll say, well, I'll tell you what, it really looks to me like Kim Jong-un is doing this. You know, and I'll write that piece, I'll publish it. And then 2 weeks later, something happens in North Korea where, you know, it looks like I was wrong. If you're not paying attention, if you don't follow your own stories, it's really easy to trick yourself into thinking you're a genius. You know? So I think that that's an important element right there, is just acknowledging that, you know what, even though I'm good at this, and I like to think I'm good at this, I'm still wrong a lot, you know?
No. In fact, throwing things out, my son said to me, he comes walking out of his bedroom, because he moved out, he's headed for D.C., got out of the Marine Corps, he's headed for D.C., going to start a new life with his girl and go to work and things like that. So, I mean, so he was packing and leaving and left yesterday. So he walks out with his OCS, like, T-shirt and sweats. He goes, I can't throw this stuff away.
Dude, I have got 2 huge containers full of camis. I've got one that are field camis and one that are inspection camis. Where am I going to stand in inspection and keep these that don't fit me anymore? I don't know. Why do I lug these things around? I couldn't tell you. I can't throw them away. What are you going to do with them?
Well, you know what? That's what I said. I said, look, do you want to see mine? I said, I still have my sweats, right? Back in the day. And he's like, I said, look, you paid with those things. Those are emotional, you know, articles that you own. They're a part of your life. When you look at that, do you see a pair of sweats? He said, No, I don't.
It's a physical connection, you know, to the physical connection to a guy I used to be. You know, I take a lot of pride in the fact that I was. But I think, you know, the elephant in the room, every Marine that gets out keeps that trunk full of uniform items, a couple pairs of boots, because deep down inside, they're praying that one day Red Dawn becomes green. And they'll be able to go down into their basement with some epic music playing, strap their camis back on, go grab their rifle out of the gun safe, and go fight the Red Scourge. I'm not saying it'll ever happen, but I'd be lying if I said that wasn't a part of why I keep this stuff.
I know. It's just. And so you've got a lot of stuff. How do you refocus now? Have you taken time off? I don't imagine you have. I imagine that you hop in and you ride a little bit in addition to doing the moving. Or have you taken time off? How are you managing all this?
Well, You know me better than to assume I took time off.
Thank you.
I don't ever think it. I just only slept 3 hours this week. It's really hard. So whatever day is it, Monday now? I've only slept 3 hours since last Monday.
It is Monday.
I'm a little frayed at the edges, admittedly. You know, but here's my concern though. That's the price that you pay for improving your life, right? Like things are, nothing's really that worth it unless it hurts a little to get it, right? And admittedly, this move is hurting a little, but we have way more space inside the house for my daughter to play. It's a great neighborhood for my wife and daughter to interact with human beings because for some reason they want to. It's, you know, it's a safe area. There's lots to do around here. There's a park and a pool in our little community. There are a lot of benefits. The cost of those benefits is that I move stuff all day and I work all night, you know, and it'll take a few weeks of that before, you know, things kind of settle down again. But once they're all settled down, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel really is worth it. You know, it's going to be a great, you know, let's say we stay here for a few years. It'll be great for my daughter to interact with people and learn the world.
Wow.
And I can move back to the woods later, you know?
You sound like your dad. You sound like, you've now transitioned, my friend. You are not that guy in the woods anymore. You are in suburbia. Congratulations.
Yeah,
great,
thanks.
No, it's called growing up. It's called putting on your big boy pants, right? It's called.
Oh man, I've renter's insurance. I've got AAA. I'm
yeah, you got
guy.
Everything I never wanted to be. I am, and it's only dragging me deeper into it. Right?
It's the cursed side of doing well, you know, because the first few years that I was a writer, I made no money, you know, and my wife and I kind of reveled in the fact that we were poor. We leaned into it, you know. My friends, you know, like my brother, as I said, works in racing. I've got a lot of friends that work in cybersecurity and things like that who all do very well for themselves. So we would all get together on weekends. And they'd be talking about the new boat that they bought, or, you know, the trip that they're going to take to Europe. And I'd be like, well, you know what? I did this guy. I played Toadie and the Girl in the Sega Genesis because I have it already. And I was able to afford to do that.
And guess what? I'm actually going to pay my cell phone bill on time this month. I'm pretty jazzed about that.
Yeah, I'm psyched. Exactly. You know, and then the unfortunate side of doing well is that over the years, as I've been more successful and I've kind of built up my career, you start to make enough money, not that I make a ton, but you start to make enough money where you're not allowed to ignore things anymore and still consider yourself a functioning adult. You know, when you can barely pay your phone bill, things like renter's insurance or things like making sure that you've got, you know, or a great example being cable, which those guys have never had, it's easy to ignore all of these grown-up things you're supposed to do
right. When
you're driven by.
Right.
But once you have enough money that, like, at the end of the month, there's enough money to put into savings, maybe you bought something kind of silly this month, maybe I bought a new gun. If I can buy a new gun, I can get AAA.
Yeah. You did AAA instead of buying a new gun. That's the watershed event.
Yeah, you know, I'm really becoming, every day I become a little bit weaker. I'll admit it. You know? Like, well, I will say, I took a look, because it's been a while since I've kind of, now I'm not a gun collector, but I'm that guy where I like to have lots of different kinds of guns for the novelty of them. I'm not the crazy dude who goes, I need 600 guns to defend myself from the government. But I am that guy who goes, that gun's really cool, I like that gun. I'd like one of those. That's really how I approach purchasing firearms. Like, I have a sort of church that serves no real purpose. What are you going to use a tourist church for? A snake gun. Yeah, to make sure it's a good snake gun. I literally got it because it's cool. I just wanted a gun that, or a handgun that shoots shotgun stuff.
Oh, really? So you have that kind of discretionary income? Wow.
Well, this is spread out over years of gun purchases, okay. Bear in mind. You know? This is the first time, I guess, I stuck all of my guns to gun cases and bags and then had to load them all up into one room. And I was like, oh, crap, I might have too many guns. I mean, you can't do fewer of these. But that's what's great about guns, though, in my opinion, is that they don't cost that much compared to, like, car guys. Now, everybody knows that dude who soups up cars, and that's a very expensive hobby. I can speak from experience. Guns aren't quite as expensive as being a car guy, and they're forever. You know, if you buy a Corvette and you put $10,000 into souping up the Corvette, it'll still end up having 150,000 miles on it one day if you drive it the way you ought to. And at that point, things are going to start to break down. The car's going to become more stressed than it is fun. Guns aren't like that, man. You know, you can tinker with your gun, take it out of the safe, clean it, you know, tinker to the rooms, put a bunch of rounds, throw it, bring it back. The maintenance, in my opinion, is a cathartic experience. It's therapeutic for me. You know, and that gun will last forever. I can pass these guns down to my daughter as long as I take good care of them. You know, I have a lot of friends in Vermont who, when they, you know, as soon as they turned 18, they had all kinds of hunting rifles and stuff because they were passed down to them from their father. Some of them had guns passed down from their father, you know? That's something that you can...
Hey, let's talk about some stuff in the news right now. What do you make of this whole story that's coming out of Chicago about guy's going to get axed off Empire, and he stages this attack. He hires two brothers off the set, and they supposedly assault him and put a noose around his neck, blah, 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 blah.
This is, in my opinion, it's symbolic of how bad our overall political discourse has become in this country, is that people are starting to capitalize on how much we want to hate each other, you know?
Yeah, I don't even know this guy's name offhand, sorry, but I'm familiar with the story.
Right.
It seems to me that he knew right away that this would make national headlines. I'm sure it would have done wonders for his career had it not come out that he had staged it. You know, very few people, I think, probably were familiar with this actor, unless you were a fan of Empire, prior to this event. But now, lots and lots more people, a much broader demographic, know his name, recognize his face. For an actor, that's significant. You know, when you're an actor, how much money your work is worth, it varies from order writing in that way. It's based largely on how big an audience you carry with you, right? So if you've got 1 million fans on Facebook or 100 million fans on Facebook, you can draw more money when you're negotiating your contract than someone with 5,000 fans on Facebook, because they know you bring a built-in audience. You take an audience with you. That's what I think this guy was aiming for. He was aiming to become a huge social media presence on the back of this, and as a result, he'd be able to renegotiate his contract with Empire. He'd be able to negotiate future contracts for acting jobs and get way more money just because more people know his name. That's how bad the discord of America has become, that it's become good business practice to capitalize on how much we want to tear each other apart. And I understand that, you know, on the right, there's a lot of people who are kind of celebrating the fact that it turns out this guy's full of shit. I don't blame him. I kind of understand, because for the first 2 weeks, we heard all about how, see, this is indicative of how every conservative is a racist. This is because of Donald Trump. You know, so those guys in Trump's camp really felt attacked by this, because they said, sure, I voted for Donald Trump. Sure, I support his border policies or his economic policies, but that doesn't mean I support lynching. Of course not. That doesn't mean I'm a racist person. I'm not saying that there's no such thing as racism in the country, but I'd argue, by and large, conservatives aren't going through their day-to-day lives going, man, if only we could get all those minorities. You know, there may be some people who feel that way, but Americans, not conservatives, not Democrats, Americans, by and large, tend to be more worried about getting through their day than they are about going after somebody else. Right? But after being painted as racist, especially after the 2016 election, and now running through that same kind of gauntlet of emotion again, a lot of conservatives are happy to see that this guy's an asshole. But Democrats, on the other hand, are backpedaling because they're saying, well, sure, this was fake, but this problem is real. Right? Which, while technically a fair statement, really kind of, at some point, if you were Nancy Pelosi, if you were a prominent Democrat, and you went on Twitter or on the news and made a bunch of really inflammatory statements off the back of the censorship, in my opinion, the right thing to do would be to say, you know, I raced to conclusions before the evidence, you know, was all in. I made a mistake. But this is a problem worth discussing. Racism is a problem worth discussing. I was wrong, but let's acknowledge that I was wrong because racism is a problem. Instead, though, we're fortifying our positions even further. The Democrats will not apologize for saying that Donald Trump is making people lynch people in the subway. Republicans, because they're celebrating the fact that, look, you guys have been dragging us through the mud on this fictional account of a hate crime, that's further entrenching them in their position. Nothing good's coming of this. This is only exacerbating existing problems. And I fear, however, that this is not the end of a trend, nor is it the start of a trend, but this is where it's starting to go mainstream. You know, we've already seen, it happens often, you know, there's a huge controversy on a college campus because, you know, a racial slur was written on an African American student's door or something like that.
Now, the Air Force Academy had that, right? I mean, and they had that video that went viral of that brigadier general who's in charge of the academy. You know, he read the Riot Act to everybody, and then it turns out that it was one of the athletes that they had brought in, and he did it himself. We just saw it with those Catholic school, high school kids in D.C.
And the problem, Alex, is the
media, though, it's like there's no scrutiny. It is not even ready, fire, aim. It's fire. There's no preparatory command because the most basic scrutiny reveals that, yeah, we can't really go to press with this unless we want to put ourselves in a position to apologize.
There's very specific language that you use when you're writing a piece about an alleged crime, right? As a journalist, and I really expect that you can find a lot of that language present in the pieces you saw published in the Washington Post and Fraser's Letter. But the headlines lack it, right? And people tend to read the headlines and not the story. So when you're writing the story, you use specific language like the alleged victim, the alleged, suspect. You know, the report indicated that. You never make declarative statements in a story about a crime that has not gone to trial yet, right? However, I can't account for every story, you know, on every publication. By and large, it seems like a lot of outlets reported this as though it legitimately happened. You know, we know for sure because this guy said so, and they should believe the victim, you know? Even if the pieces included that language that it should have included, the headlines certainly didn't. And the press didn't learn their lesson. You know, this morning on the Washington Post, there's a story with the headline, sixth grade student arrested after refusing to recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I'm not sure if you saw that story.
I stay away from it because you read it and, I mean, literally, I mean, it ruins your day, yes?
Yes, absolutely. Unfortunately,
I mean, it's just
the world that I live in.
Yeah, it's honestly, but it's horrible when you look at it and what happens with this, you know, is it skews the national discussion. And it's all, for instance,
we're talking about a few individuals and then 350 million Americans picking sides.
Right. The thing that happened to those high school kids is you had people that deliberately set out that day, all right, to do exactly what they did. And that was to create a viral event with cameras rolling and that contained a false narrative. And they did it. And
now,
it exploded.
It's important that we acknowledge the fact that people on both sides of that subject came there with the hope. You don't go and protest unless you're hoping to get attention. You want to be a viral story. You want national attention because you're either protesting or counter-protesting a subject that you feel passionately about, a subject that you feel as though isn't getting its due attention, and that's why you have to take to the streets. That's the premise behind protesting, is drawing attention to your cause. But again, another example of how we're seeing the racial divides in America being leveraged for attention.
You know, we're not actually trying to solve the problem. We're leveraging the problem to make ourselves or our personal causes more successful. And you're right. This only leads to worsening relations between Americans. There's something, forcing this conversation about race is a good thing to do, but the ways in which we're doing it are self-defeating. We're so eager to be a victim on both sides, to be perfectly frank, so eager to be a victim that we lose sight of when people really are.
But again, Alex, since when does the truth and being right, when does that not matter? And that's to me that's most scary in all of this.
Disturbing.
Is that big outlets, right? Big outlets, like we're talking about the New York Times News Division, right, are retracting major stories, and you're finding out that this shit was fabricated.
Well, how are we as a nation, you know, holding up to this? We've got, you know, Cortez in Congress right now, who's doing interviews where she says plainly, she's like, I think people get too hung up on whether or not I'm factually accurate. What matters is being morally right. And she talks as though those two things are mutually exclusive. Like, you can either be factually accurate or morally right. No, we should be making our moral and our ethical decisions based on the facts. You know, I started following AOC on Twitter for the same reason that I follow Donald Trump. So I'm not a particular fan of either.
Right.
And I'm looking, number one, to stay informed. But number two, just because I'm not a fan of you doesn't mean you don't have anything good to say. You know, you can learn from everyone. And my intent, you know, if you follow me on Twitter, you'll find I regularly will retweet something that Donald Trump says, and I'll be like, this guy's right, you know. But I'll also regularly retweet something that he says and be like, this is terrible. This is bad. You shouldn't suggest that you're above investigation as the president. I try to do the same thing with AOC, but I can't. You know, like, everything that she tweets, like, well, that's misleading. It's misrepresenting the facts. Donald Trump also misleads and misrepresents the facts. I would argue that they're using the exact same approach to politics, which is emboldening their base and not worrying about expanding beyond it.
Right?
They have a loudspeaker that the whole nation can hear, but each of them are only talking to 10% of the people.
Right.
But it's popular. It's exciting. It creates good headlines. This is the way that we're moving, is a much more reality TV style of reality than reality really is. It's more important that we have a narrative than it is that we have the truth.
Well, you know? Because I mean, so if you look at her and the people around her, how long does she stay in Congress? Well, you know, maybe not that long, because the brand she will build as she goes about this, right, may become bigger than Congress and may become worth more money than being in Congress, and it may take her to something else.
It could feasibly. And I'll be clear. I don't want to not like this congresswoman. This is what I don't want to not like this politician. If I had my way, all politicians on either side of the aisle would be perfect in their place, but willing to discuss and compromise in the best interest of the nation. You know, I want people who are supremely confident in their own structure of belief and are so confident, in fact, that they're willing to discuss it critically with others without feeling threatened. You know, we see it a lot in the QA discussion in the United States. I'm obviously a big QA guy. I love my gun. But I know a lot of guys that love guns, they're so threatened by the idea of any new gun legislation, or so threatened by the idea of liberals wanting to take the guns away, that we can't talk to each other about it. You can't put, you know, a GOP card carrying gun owner on one side of the table and an anti-gun liberal on the other side of the table and have a conversation. You know, and that's a problem in our country. We need to be fervent in our beliefs. We need to be sure about our beliefs.
But they need to be based in some type of relevant facts. I mean, let me tell you, equally as disturbing is the story out of the Andrew McCabe interview, right? You hear him citing the 25th Amendment, and you go read the 25th Amendment, right? So don't just talk about it and listen to what people say. Go read the 25th Amendment. The 25th Amendment isn't even close to covering what he's citing it for. And you're listening to this shit, and you're going, you know, I don't, like, this, like, at what point does the truth and anchored in something that's right and valid, at what point does that count? And why doesn't when somebody like Andy McCabe is talking about the 25th Amendment, somebody look at him and said, dude, I cannot believe that you work at this level of the FBI and don't understand the 25th Amendment. It doesn't apply here. Impeachment applies, okay? The 25th Amendment doesn't. Fuck already.
Now, I've got a take on this McCabe thing. It's a little different than I'd argue maybe you'll find elsewhere in the press.
I think
what we were seeing was a guy who was scared and on his back heels. You know, I think he was frantic. And, you know, there's plenty of remarks out there about him effectively being afraid that he was going to lose his job if he investigated the president. It is important that we acknowledge the fact that Donald Trump is not the easiest guy to work for.
Oh, no. But again, there was a way to go about dealing with Donald Trump, and you and I have talked about it. Those guys were warm.
It's a palace intrigue game at this point, and I'm not really that into, you know, so let's say this guy in a meeting, on one of the worst days of his professional life, said some really dumb shit.
Okay.
You know?
Right.
Let's say 3 days in a row, during a time where he was sure he was going to lose his job, and he thought that his life was upside down, and I want to make point out, I'm not defending Andrew McCabe, I'm just saying, we're talking about a couple of conversations that now, once you put it in the New York Times, makes it seem like a really significant, huge event. But in the moment, for the people who were present, we were talking about five guys in a room who all, as far as they were concerned, were more or less on the same team, shooting the shit. I agree that it was wrong what he was doing. I agree that he clearly had bias at play. But I have a lot of trouble feeling like the sky is falling when high-level government officials in a private meeting are talking about dumb shit. Because they're human beings. You and I and four other guys we know could sit around a room and talk about dumb shit as well. But because we're not Andrew McCabe, because it doesn't affect Donald Trump, because it's not national political news, the dumb shit that we say in a room doesn't really matter. So we pretend that this five-minute snippet of this guy's life is the most important facet of anything, when in truth it led to nothing. You know, Donald Trump, for all intents and purposes, certainly wasn't playing, you know, good baseball on his side either. I'm not saying that he's a criminal. I'm just saying it's not easier to work for Donald Trump.
No.
This guy's an asshole and he said some dumb stuff. I have trouble pretending it's a big deal because nothing came of it. Now, if they had tried to pursue the 25th Amendment, if they had really tried to chase Donald Trump down and throw him out of office, maybe we could go, you know what, this was a witch hunt. But instead, nothing came of it. We're really upset about a conversation a guy had like a year or two ago. And I have trouble believing that that matters. I know people want to be mad.
No. Here's what I would say to that. To me, what's bothersome is there's a difference between the politicians of this country, right, and people that raise their hand to support and defend the Constitution, okay? There's a difference, okay? And so to me, you and I have talked about this. James Comey goes to the Oval Office. He's been warned since the day Trump got nominated as Republican
the candidate for president, right?
Right. Since the day he was, he got nominated, he's been told, when you deal with this guy, you write everything down, right? You be very deliberate with him. And so,
I wouldn't argue that that's bad advice.
No. It's good advice. So,
So hold on.
Comey goes to the Oval Office, right? And you know, we do the whole role-playing thing, right? And it's like, okay, Kushner leave, everybody leave, and now it's him and Comey. Comey's been told this is going to happen, right? He's been warned. And so when it happens, what do you do? In my opinion, it's pretty easy, Alex. He looks at the president and he says, I can't talk about that with you. Okay.
I agree. No, we've talked
right?
about this before.
And so, I mean, that's easy.
You're saying this as though I'm defending McCabe or Comey, and I'm not.
Well, then it goes down that road of game playing and whatnot, and I don't.
I agree with you. I do. But the problem I have on the other side of this coin is this precedent that we're setting in the media and in our national commentary, where we go, if a group of government officials sit in a room together and discuss the 25th Amendment, that is the worst thing that can happen. That is a terrible thing. That's, as Donald Trump said it, they were trying to mutiny or something along those lines. I want my government officials to feel free to discuss things like the 25th Amendment in meetings. I want my government.
Yeah, but just get it fucking, right. To me, I'm with you. Look, if you're disturbed and you think, but it's got to be evidence-based and we got to do this right because we're not a cabal. This is not a banana republic.
But here's my question to you. If since nothing came of it, since they didn't pursue the 25th Amendment, wouldn't that effectively be what that is? You need to say the words out loud first for someone to say, no, we can't do it. You know,
so,
common thing that writers say is there's no judgment in brainstorming. I'm not saying this is a brainstorming session. I'm just saying we're talking about policing thought crimes at this point. And I have a problem with that on the Democrat side, but we want to tear people apart because we think that maybe they have some biases that they're not saying, so they're thinking of the wrong thing. But we're doing it on the conservative side, too. We're saying, well, those guys were thinking about a thing that we really think is bad. They even talked about it out loud once, the audacity. To me, I go, I don't really give a shit what you have a conversation about. I care about what you do. I don't care what you think. I care about how you act. And in my opinion, because nothing came of it, what we're really doing here is we're choosing sides again over an issue that's not really that important. I know that people are going to hate me for that because they really want it to be.
Some people might, but if you're interested in the truth, right, and you've seen the behavior that's come out of the FBI, right, and this goes back to the truth in journalism, the truth in general, okay, and if you've watched what's come out of the FBI, in my opinion, if you don't have questions about the straightforwardness and ultimately that institution's fidelity to the truth, then you're not paying attention. And so I agree with you.
I contend that that's exactly the approach that I want them to take when it comes to our elected officials as well. We should always be having the conversation. We should always be worried about the fidelity of the FBI. And we should always be having this conversation and always be worried about the fidelity of the executive branch. That is the only way we stay free. That, you know, freedom, to, you know, I think, I, Lord knows, I won't credit it to the right person, but the idea that freedom is a responsibility is an important thing to remember. We need to be critical of every extremely powerful organization in our country. We need to be critical of the FBI. We need to be critical of Congress. We need to be critical of Google. These people hold overwhelming power over the lives that we lead. And the history is shown time and time again that when we lean back on our heels and assume that they're going to take care of us, the people in power tend to take care of themselves.
Right.
You know, it's human nature. I want critical conversations about every entity that's got a lot of power in this country. But I also want us to be able to have these critical conversations, even too long, in the middle of them. I want us to be able to do that in different environments. I want us to be able to do it in an official and an unofficial capacity. I may like Andrew McCabe. I may not agree with what he did. But objectively, when I pull myself back out from it and I go, at the time, they really felt like they couldn't trust the president. This guy's frantic and spitballing. I could see it. If anything, if I was the meeting, I might not be the guy that goes, well, what about the 25th Amendment? But at the meeting, when somebody goes, what about the 25th Amendment? I would argue somebody in the room better Google that shit if nobody knows it. This is a conversation we do have because we need to be cognizant of these things. I don't have a problem with conversations. I have a problem with actions. I have a problem with behavior. Conversations are very tough. Now, I'm not talking conspiracy to commit a crime, because then we're talking about crime.
No. But again, if you were talking, so if we change the narrative and say, you know, they were sitting there and they had a wide ranging conversation about the 25th Amendment, and and then as well as impeachment, and then, you know, but Comey, when the president went there, he put him on notice that he couldn't talk to him. Comey then comes back, he calls the attorney general. Everything happens. The context of it is completely different. Yeah, yes. But in the midst of all this murky, in my opinion, bullshit action by the director of the FBI, those actions look as, dare I say, amateurish or as disorganized and kind of poorly thought in this game that you really do need to be right when you're dealing with the President of the United States. And you're dealing with somebody like Donald Trump, who makes up the rules as he goes, yes?
I think when we're talking about Andrew McCabe and James Comey, we're really talking about guys that didn't do a good job, right? We're talking about guys that don't. This is the problem I have with my position. This is what I stand by it, but it's tougher to hold this position when the guys are doing a shitty job, right? But it doesn't change my values that these conversations should be protected and permitted, even encouraged at all times. If the Republicans of this country heard that Andrew McCabe at one point in a meeting said, should we consider the 25th Amendment about Barack Obama because of this Obamacare thing? The Republicans in this country would not be calling for a test. They wouldn't be. It's as simple as that. You know, the same way the Democrats are not calling for everybody in Virginia to resign their office because they all wore blackface and raped women. Because we're playing politics, not values. You know, if you look at something that someone does that hurts your party and you're furious about it, ask yourself how you would respond. I'm not asking you this question, it's just general.
Okay.
Ask yourself how you would respond if someone on the other side did it to the other party. If your response would be different, then you're not being objective.
Right. No, and you're bullshit. And again, that's what we see ad nauseum, right, in news cycle, in politics, that, look, it only matters who says it. Right, it doesn't matter what they say. So if Nancy Pelosi would have said, "Let's declare a national emergency on the border," then everybody would have been on board with it because
it would be everyone would love it.
Right, it's the same thing. It's the same thing that had it been Republicans. This to me is so funny. It's so absurd. It's ridiculous. Right, the governor in his medical school yearbook. There's a picture. He won't say which guy he is, right? Of one guy's in a Ku Klux Klan outfit, the other guy's in blackface. Now, this is in the 19...
He doesn't even know which one he is.
He's saying he doesn't know. I bet you he does. This is in the 19...
Arguably, I could be either one.
Right.
Right. It's not a sense.
Right. But
look, the Democrats in this country are not calling for a book.
No!
Particularly because the lieutenant governor is now being accused of rape. So they would have to cede control of Virginia to a Republican, effectively, if they took every, you know, dishonest Democrat out of office one by one. And the Democrats are demonstrating, without a doubt, in my opinion, that it's more important to them that they maintain control over Virginia than it is that they stand by this idea of being racially accepting, than it is that they stand by this idea that there's no place for racism in our nation. Instead, they're arguing racism is okay as long as it's from our team.
Exactly.
You know, anti-Semitism is okay as long as it's from our team. And you're seeing it time and time again. You know, the Democrats, I do think it's important that we learn how to distinguish between criticizing Israel and criticizing the Jewish people. That is an important distinction we need to learn, truly.
Which is, look, it's part of a truth-based discussion, yes?
Absolutely.
That we can discuss the political... I watched a really interesting thing on Netflix that interviews former agents of the Mossad. Yeah, go find it. Just do a search on Mossad on Netflix.
I scrolled past it, but I haven't clicked on it. I'll have to. But I mean, a perfect example in my Israel is the F-16. You know, the F-16 Fighting Falcon, which for a long time has been a workhorse fourth-generation fighter for the United States. China has incorporated a lot of technology from the F-16 into their fighters. Ask yourself where they got it. Israel sold it to them. They got mad at the United States at one point. I think it was in the late 70s, maybe the early 80s. They got mad at the United States because we were working together to develop a new fighter jointly based on a lot of F-16 technology. Israel and the United States fell apart on that deal. Israel was so angry that they turned around and sold our fighter technology to China to teach us a lesson. That is not the behavior of a good ally. Now, I'm not anti-Israel. Israel, just like any other nation, goes through political changes. The culture shifts. Things change from year to year, from cycle to cycle. But, you know, a slight against my nation decades past is not a slight against my nation today. But it's important that we're able to criticize Israel without Jewish Americans feeling as though we're talking about them.
Right.
Right. We're talking about a national government, not a people.
Right.
However, the Democratic Party, there is a real threat of legitimate anti-Semitism in the Democratic Party, if you ask me. But they're able to now kind of hide that behind the very important and real discussion about how we should be able to differentiate between Israel and Jewish people. But this is reactionary because they got caught being anti-Semitic. So then they came up with this discussion after the fact. That's not how it's supposed to work. You know?
Well, you know what? And here's the funny part, not the funny, but the humorous part is that you have so many, you know, Jewish people in the media that donate to the Democratic Party.
Absolutely. You know, it boggles my mind that we are so willing to accept double standards at face value when it comes to our national politics. That the Democratic Party has championed for at least 2 years now, but honestly, much, much longer than that, that the Republican Party is the party of prejudice, and the Democratic Party is the party of inclusion. The Democratic Party has demonstrated unequivocally in the past 6 months, I would contend, that they are not the party of inclusion. That what a lot of these conservative, you know, sky-is-falling pundits were saying was right, which is the Democratic Party is just as prejudicial. They're only willing to accept you if you share their very specific beliefs. You can, to be fair, probably be any color, skin, and gender, but you still need to share their very specific beliefs. Otherwise, you're a bad guy. You know, it's a form of classism. It's certainly, at times, a form of racism. So what it really is it shows that they're hypocrites. You know, they're the thing, as the GOP, or as the worst elements of the GOP that they're always worried about. Because we do tend, to be fair, on both sides of the fence, we tend to aim our conversations at the worst elements of the other party. Right? We don't tend to talk about the pretty reasonable, even-killed Republicans. You know, we don't tend to talk about the pretty chill, you know, willing to negotiate Democrats. We talk about the ones that draw headlines because they propose a Green New Deal that says people who, I understand that they retracted it, but I swear to God it was on their own website on the fact that the Green New Deal, we need to defend jobs for people, or money, income for people who are unwilling to work. You know, every time you hear a Democrat say, Democrats don't want to come and take your guns. You can find 6 sound bites from a Democrat saying specifically right. That they want to come and take your gun. Right? So which one do we choose to talk about? The one that wants to come and take our gun. You know, like, what we do, admittedly, I do it myself, we tend to pick the worst of the other party to go to war with. You know? And it makes sense, it's a good strategy, but it doesn't really benefit the American people. We need to be encouraging compromise rather than encouraging more extreme headlines, more extreme statements. I think it's a victory for the United States that a 29-year-old bartender got elected to Congress, but I don't think it's a victory that she doesn't know what she's doing. We got to be able to talk about one while acknowledging the other. You know, and as long as we're chasing the most extreme headlines and we're trying to chase the most extreme bases, we're never going to get anywhere.
Hey, that's the way it works, okay? That's the way it looks. That's what drives the media, right? That's what drives the news cycle, and so I mean that's the way it is. And there's nothing on the horizon that will overtake it because you got to drive people to those websites. That's what defines advertising revenue. That's how people get paid, and that is the business now.
Which, in the interest of full disclosure, seems like a great time for me to plug the websites I need you guys to go to, so that you can click on the stories that I and my coworkers. you know, I recently they were like, so what news outlets would you contend for a safe outlet to go and read? You know, which is a common question. Where should I go? get news just truth without being colored by bias? And that's a really hard question because I don't think that you should go to any news outlet, including my own, even sites which are personally run. I read every article that goes up on that website. Don't go to anything I've written. Don't go to anything anyone's written and look at it without a critical eye. Take me to task if you see something that you feel as though I'm misrepresented. That's the point, right? That's what we ought to be doing. If you trust me and you like my opinions, you know, when you read my articles or you hear me on here, I really appreciate that. But that does not give me carte blanche to write whatever I want. And if I start slipping, I'm just as bad as the next guy. Likewise with my coworkers and my peers, do not go to Reuters, which is a great outlet, and go, all right, everything I get from this website is going to be legit. Do not go to BBC, which I would argue is sometimes a better place to look at American politics, just because they're one step further removed. They still have a dog in the fight, but they're one step further removed. It's sometimes it pays to go get their perspective, you know?
Right.
But look at everything that you read in the media with a critical eye, because some outlets are shitty outlets with some incredible journalists. Some outlets are great outlets with some shitty journalists. Every story is an entity unto itself. You know, be critically minded about everything that you read, and that's the best way to inoculate yourself against this nonsense that we're surrounded with all the time.
Let me read you a couple of emails. One is Yard Rights. It's not an issue until dogs start shitting in your yard. So there's a little of that. There's
that's
a little.
Fair. Yeah. Now, can I shoot that dog with a paintball gun? Is that allowed?
I think your homeowners association would frown on that.
To be fair, for anyone listening, I don't think I could shoot a dog with a paintball gun. I could shoot a person in the face and laugh, but I don't know if I could shoot a dog with a paintball gun.
Yeah, dogs are helpless. Come on. Unless they're being predators, then you have to do what you have to do. Here's another one. Yeah. It is a big deal. They have to separate their personal beliefs from their job. Right?
I agree. They also have to be able to have conversations without assuming it'll be national news.
Got it.
Otherwise, it can't be your job.
There's another one entitled Fuck McCabe. Don't forget the text messages between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page referring to the Plan B meetings in Andy's offices. Don't forget about the unmasking. Don't forget Comey McCabe used opposition research paid for by Hillary Clinton to justify the investigation. And then 1, 2, 3, 4 exclamation marks. Our only hope is that Mueller burns the house down.
I'm going to, again, be honest here. There's some good points there. There really are. But there's also a lot of anger at the other team there. You know, you can feel it coming through. And as much as I understand, I even appreciate it, it's important that we separate our anger from the other team from an objective analysis of the situation. It's important that they leave their biases at the door. But when we're talking about national politics, the stakes are just as high for us as it is for the director of the FBI. When we're talking about it, conversation, the stakes are our future. So if we're not willing to separate our bias from the conversation, it's really hard for us to go after him for his. Right? You need to be something other than what you're accusing them of in order for it to really be justifiable.
I can't wait to see the next email that comes blowing in here after that.
We're going to be real mad. But I may think that it was the right thing to do to fire him, but you're still going to have a lot of trouble convincing me that he irreparably harmed anything, other than maybe Donald Trump's popularity, which, to be perfectly frank, he's done a pretty good job of harming himself.
Well, he's done a pretty good job of selling himself, too. Anyway, all right. You have to get back to moving, and I've got to move on as well. First of all, we didn't talk about shit that you've written this week. We talked about you moving, but I thoroughly enjoy the liberal arts part of this job and the way this show is here on Almarine Radio, and thank you for supporting that. Tell everybody where they can find your work.
You guys can find me. I'm the editor of FighterSweep.com. You're not going to find a lot of politics there. It's by design. I try to keep politics out of it. It's mostly just great military news. You can also find some of my more politically oriented stuff on newsrep.com. You can find me on Facebook. It's facebook.com/AlexHollingsWriter. Twitter @AlexHollings52. And if you go to Poppy One Mechanics, you can find some great stuff I wrote last week. I had a huge piece about the Saturn V published with Poppy One Mechanics. I'd love it if you all went and read it.
talking all about how, to be fair, our space program is a little bit based on Nazi science and technology, but, you know, yeah. Beyond space justifies me. I'm really proud of it. So if you guys are going to go check out one thing I wrote this week, please go check that out. But by all means, come and find me on social media. If you don't like my take, yell at me. That's the point, right? Let's have a conversation.
There you have it. The one and only Alex Hollings. Moving, his mother and brother coming to join the big house, the big family. This is going to be awesome in the next year. I can feel it already. Also moving himself and trying to get internet and finish his move. So all the best of luck to you, sir, and thanks for the visit.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me out.
All right, there you have it. Alex Hollings, waxing eloquent about, you know, and again, his point about Andy McCabe is absolutely right. If you look at the context of the discussion wasn't like that. And that's the problem I have with you. When you begin to put the mosaic together, I would love for Andy McCabe to be able to point to that and say, no, here's what that meeting was. Let me give you the footnotes to that. That meeting was different things were being brought up. If this was true, which are things that we would entertain. If this was true, then what? Right? And the discussion about the 25th Amendment came up and was quickly put aside because it clearly didn't apply. Right? And so you would like it to be like that, but it isn't like that. And that's the problem. So, we'll take a break. More of All Marine Radio. The Gunner coming up next on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.